Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, Developing Complex Scenarios Simply. Today's presenter is Andrew Borley. Andrew has been IBM software engineer for 10 years, holding various development positions at the IBM Hersley Software Laboratory, including roles working with customers on service-oriented architecture projects and developing open-source SOA technologies. For the last 4 years, Andrew has been a developer in the WebSphere ESB team, responsible for mediation primitive development and related areas. He brings his in-depth expertise of the product to this technical exchange. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Andrew.
Okay, thank you very much, Joseph. And good afternoon or good morning, wherever you are. And welcome to this presentation. As well as myself, I also have in the room Ben Lodwidge, who will be joining in with the Q&A session later. He's our WebSphere ESB Level 3 support team lead. So yeah, during the Q&A session, feel free to ask any questions you want to. And we shall endeavour to answer them, and if we can't, then we'll work out how to get the answer to you. So welcome to this presentation. I'm going to go on to slide number 2 now, please. This is what we're going to be looking at today. We'll do a very brief recap about the product WebSphere ESB. And then the major part of the presentation is going to be going through a particular scenario using WebSphere ESB and having the scenario implemented as a WebSphere ESB mediation flow. And we're going to demonstrate various areas of the product, including promoted properties, aggregation, dynamic endpoints, and advanced XSLT functions. So there's lots of stuff. It's going to be quite a high-level sort of walkthrough. We don't really have time to go into amazingly deep detail about anything, but feel free to get in contact during the Q&A or later on if you have any questions at all about any aspect here. I'd like to move on to slide 3 now, please. So to start off with the ESB product recap, WebSphere ESB, we're part of the IBM service-oriented architecture and the business process management stack. And we kind of sit in this space between these two other WebSphere products. So WebSphere Application Server is the base that we sit on, and that provides our J2EE application hosting and various supporting services, such as access to databases and so on. WebSphere ESB provides your message transformation and message enrichment and message routing function. It's specifically designed to kind of sit between a client and an actual service. And then your WebSphere Process Server is built on top of these two. It's kind of built alongside of WebSphere ESB, but it contains all of the WebSphere ESB function, and it also provides things like process choreography and business logic. So WebSphere Process Server contains ESB, and it contains a lot more extra stuff as well. But today we're going to be focusing on WebSphere ESB. And then related to both WebSphere ESB and WebSphere Process Server is the tooling piece, which is another product called WebSphere Integration Developer. And that's what you use, and that's what all the screenshots that I'm going to be showing you will be coming from to do your development of your WebSphere ESB mediation flows. So if we can move on to slide 4 now. Here we go. Okay. Just looking a bit deeper at the two products here. WebSphere ESB is specifically supports mediation modules, which are the functional units, and they contain only either mediation flows or some straight Java code. WebSphere Process Server contains both of these, so also holds mediation flows and runs Java for you, but it supports the idea of modules, or specifically integration modules, and you can add you also get these extra pieces. You get the business process execution language for creating processes. You get human tasks, and you get rule groups and lots of other stuff besides. So this is just to show the kind of the recap between the differences between WebSphere ESB and WebSphere Process Server. So I should mention at this point, these two slides came from Andrew Ferrier, who does a great presentation. He's a WebSphere ESB specialist in IBM Software Services, and he does a great presentation, if you can catch it, called WebSphere ESB Best Practices. And he goes through some of the best practice information around using WebSphere ESB. Worthwhile if you can catch that. So if we go on to the next slide, number 5. Thank you. And so after we've done our quick product recap, we're going to start looking at a particular scenario. And if we go on to slide 6, please. Thank you. So this is the kind of made-up scenario that we've come up with to show off some of the different features, some of the different things you can do with WebSphere ESB. So the idea here is that we have a stock purchase scenario where we have a wholesaler providing a stock purchasing service for customers, and this uses WebSphere ESB to do various things. First, it's going to check the incoming message for its validity and check for any missing information and add it in if necessary. Then we're going to make multiple calls out to a separate stock control application to reserve each item that's going to be being purchased. Then, depending on an order priority that's defined by the client in the incoming message, and that could be such as same day or a 48-hour delivery or perhaps a weekly delivery, we're going to call out to one of a variety of different dispatch services to send out the order. And then finally, we're going to call an invoicing service to manage the invoice. This is calling out to multiple different services. If we go on to the next slide, number 7. So here's a picture of this scenario, which kind of goes through those different steps and explains kind of what's going on at each point. What we're going to be doing is using a mediation to go through. When a message comes in, we're going to check those details. We're going to make calls out to reserve the stock. We're going to send off to a dispatch service, one of these three different dispatch services. Then we're going to call to an invoicing service, and then we'll send the message back. And also, if there's a problem when we're checking the details or reserving the stock, we're going to send an error message back at that point, a fault message. Okay, so can we go on to slide number 8, please? And this slide explains how the message will flow through the system as it goes along. On the first start, we have the client submitting a particular purchase order, and then the mediation flow will check to see if the order details are correct or not, and if they're not, we'll send a message back. If they are okay, then we'll go on to reserve each of those order items in turn by calling out to the stock control service. If a particular item isn't in stock, we'll send an error message back at that point and stop the order. If everything goes through so far, then we'll send off a message to the dispatch service to dispatch the order. And finally, we'll call out the invoicing service to do the invoicing. And after that, we shall return an order acknowledgement. So these are the sort of things you need to be thinking about before you do any sort of implementation. You want to be working out how your scenario is going to work, how your message is going to flow, other things you might want to think about sorting out and thinking about are things like your business object structures, what your messages are going to look like at each point in the flow, and that's particular as well as the external ones, so the sort of messages that your external services will need to be sent and will be returning. It's also you want to think about the kind of internal structures that you'll need as well to hold your kind of your state as you're going through. And there's other things you want to think about, such as non-functional aspects like security and performance and so on. But for now, we're just kind of explaining through the scenario that we're going to be implementing. So if we can go on to slide 9, please. Thank you. So there's lots of different ways that, that this scenario could be implemented. In this case, we're going to implement it as a WebSphere ESB mediation flow. But you could also use WebSphere Process Server and perhaps use a BPEL, Business Process Execution Language flow, to do something along these sort of lines. Or you could even custom build it as a J2EE app. But what we're going to show is how simple WebSphere ESB makes implementing a scenario that's mildly complex like this one is. So if we can go on to slide 10, please. So here we have a picture of the entire flow. We've got a single operation that we're running through, and we're encapsulating each of those blocks as a separate subflow to encapsulate each of those functional areas that we're implementing. And using subflows is very useful. It simplifies your flows down substantially, because otherwise you end up with everything on one page and it gets quite unwieldy quite quickly. And it also allows you to work on each of those blocks separately, and you can do that also in parallel, because they're separate files in your file system. So if need be, you can have someone else working on particular flows at the same time as you're working on another one. Other ways in which you could implement this is to break it up into multiple mediation components in your assembly diagram and have them running through that way. And you could break it into request and response flows. In this case, we've got it just as a single flow. But you could, if it makes sense to your scenario where you are going through and you're definitely calling out to a particular target service and then you're coming back, then that makes more sense to have it as a request and response flow. In this case, we've got it all as a single flow. So if we can go on to slide 11, please. Thank you. So looking at the entire flow, we've got the separate pieces broken up like this. So first we have a subflow to check the message details and add any missing data. Then we have a quick message element setter mediation primitive in the middle there, just to set up order information. Then we call out to the stock reservation service and call out, and we're going to make a single call. We're going to make multiple calls, once for each item in the order. Then we go on to the dispatch subflow, where we're going to be using that to choose a particular dispatch service and call out to the actual service. And then we're going to do the invoicing subflow to convert the message and call the invoicing service. And then there's going to be an acknowledgement sent back to the original client using that input response node on the right-hand side. And there's also a section on the bottom right-hand side where we're handling failures and fault conditions. So if there's a problem when we're checking our message or when we're reserving our stock, we have defined faults to be sent back to the client. And if there's a particular failure during those flows, which is undefined, then we're going to catch that in a general failure subflow. So the rest of this presentation will be going into each of these subflows to explore a particular aspect of WebSphere ESB. So if we can go on to slide 12, we shall begin. Looking at the check message subflow, we're going to show how you can use promoted properties to switch on and off validation and tracing for when you're in a development or debugging mode. But this is what the inside of that subflow looks like. So we first have a validation primitive, which if it's enabled, we're going to use to validate the incoming message, service message object. If that goes through fine, then we're going to, if we're enabled, we're going to just trace out the SMO to the system logs. And then we use a message filter here to check if a particular field is set in the message. And then there's a database lookup primitive, which retrieves an address if it's missing and sets that into the service message object. If that all goes through fine, then we carry on out of the subflow. If there is a problem and we can't find a particular customer in the database, then we send off a customer not found problem. If there's any other problem, then we call out to the general failure subflow to manage that failure. So if we can go on to slide 13, please. So we're looking here at the promoted properties view in the properties panel pane in WebSphere Integration Developer for both the message validator validate input message primitive and the trace input message trace primitive. And you can see that we've switched on promotion for both the two enabled properties for both of these primitives. And that means that these properties are promoted up to the level above, and in this case, because they're in a subflow, that means they'll be promoted to the level of the subflow primitive in the outer flow, and there in the main mediation flow, you'll be able to promote them again. And that means that they're configurable in the WebSphere ESB Integrated Solutions console. So that's the WebSphere ESB admin console that many people know. And if we go on to slide 14, we see when you deploy your application to the server, the WebSphere ESB server, and if you go into the WebSphere ESB Integrated Solutions console, you can find those promoted properties are available to be changed in as an admin function. So if you're looking for a particular properties, you want to go into the application section of the left hand side control, then into SCAR modules, then into a stock, then into your scenario. In this case, it's called stock purchase scenario, and then go into properties. And you'll find your promoted properties are there, and they're linked together under the group that is set in the promoted properties panel and with the name that you've given them in the promoted properties panel. So in this case, we can now switch on or off your validation and your tracing for this particular subflow. So you might want to have validation enabled when you're developing your client code or something like that, to check that the messages coming in are as you expect them. And the validation will just run a valid against the incoming message and compare that to the business object definitions that you've created for your messages. And if there's a failure there, then it will raise that failure and it will send it off down the general error handling subflow. For tracing, it can be very, very useful to print out your service message object, your incoming message, as it goes through, and that can be very useful when you're developing and debugging, but perhaps you don't want to do that when you're in a production environment, so being able to switch it off using the administration console could be very useful, and using the promoted properties is one way of doing that. So if we can go on to slide number 15 now. So now we're on to the next subflow. And in this case, we're doing this reserve stock operation where we're going to be calling out to a particular service multiple times. And we're going to show you the aggregation pattern here, which allows you to call out, which allows you to run multiple calls and call out to a service multiple times for a particular single input message. So this is a bit more complex than the previous subflow, but it's all pretty understandable, hopefully. So we have a fanout primitive. The fanout and the fanin are the important parts in an aggregation pattern. They're the pieces that fire their output terminals multiple times for each item that you have in an array of items in your message. And then we use an XSLT transformation to copy that single item out of a particular context space into the message body, so it's ready for the stock reservation service to do the calling out. Then we make use a service invoke primitive to make the call out to the stock reservation service. And then we can use a message element setter primitive to append the results of that call out to a particular place in the service message object. Then we have a fan in, and that's essentially where our loop ends, and we go round to the beginning again if there's more items in the list. And otherwise, the fan in primitive, it fires its output terminal when all the items have been processed. And then if our reserve stock service invoke primitive sends back a message saying that an item is out of stock or not found, then we go off down a different path and send a message back saying that the item is not found. So we break out of the subflow and those fault messages get returned back to the client. So if we can go on to slide 16, please. So looking a bit closer at each of these elements, we have the fanout and fanin properties details panel here. So you can see that the fanout primitive has got its setting as to fire the output terminal with the original input message for each element in this particular expression. So it's going into the service message object using an XPath expression and pointing at a field which is set up as an array of items. So there are multiple things called order items, and each of those will mean that the output terminal of the fanout primitive gets fired for each of those items. And then linked to that, we have the fanin primitive, and that's set up so that its output terminal only fires when the associated fanout, so the first primitive that we've got highlighted here, has iterated through all of the messages. So that's when it's iterated through all of those order items in the message. So if we can go on to slide 17, please. Thank you. So this is the XSL transform in the subflow here. So you'll find when you use a fanout that sets up a particular context in your context space in your service message object and sets the type of that occurrence, the type of that particular field in the context to the type of the item that you're pointing at in the fanout primitive. So if you're looking at this XSL transformation, you can see that we're moving the context, primitive context, fanout context, and then the occurrence item, and we're moving that into the body of the outgoing message from this XSL transform. So what we're doing is we're taking that single item that's been chosen by the fanout primitive, and we're putting it as the main body of the message to be used by the service invoke primitive, which is the next primitive along, so that our message is all set up to be sent out to the reserve stock service. So if we go on to slide 18, please. So after we've made that call out, we've done that call out, and it's gone through fine. Otherwise, we'd have gone off down the different paths. But in this case, it's gone through fine. And so we have a response back from the reservation service. And what we have, we've also got set up a particular another space in the context. It's the shared context where we've got we've set that up to have a set of reserved order items, and we're appending the response that we get back from the service invoke onto that list of reserved order items. And because we're in the shared context, this part gets saved so that we can have the entire list created of responses for each of the doc items that we're going out to reserve. So if we can go on to slide 19. So yes, so that was the reserve stock subflow, and we've gone through and broke out into the separate items of our order, and made a call out for each one using the fan out and fan in. So now we're moving on to the dispatch subflow. In this case, we're going to be using the endpoint lookup primitive and WebSphere service registry and repository, which is a separate WebSphere product, to choose a particular dispatch service to make a call out to. So this is how the subflow looks. It's pretty simple. We've got an endpoint lookup primitive that is making the call out, sending a query to WSRR with particular details about the message and the priority that has been specified in the incoming message. And WSRR will return a particular service endpoint, which gets set in the SMO in the service message object, to be used as the endpoint address that the dispatch order service, the service invoke primitive, will call out to. So we're dynamically choosing a particular endpoint to make a call out to, and then we're doing the actual call out to it. So if we can go on to slide 20, please. So this is what the properties for that endpoint lookup primitive look like. And we've got a few settings set up. So the few properties set up. So we're choosing to search for a dispatch interface with a particular namespace, and we're choosing to return the first matching endpoint and set a routing target for that. And we also have the under the advanced settings, we have a user property set up where we have a name, dispatch priority, and we have an XPath value where we're pointing to a particular place in the message, in the incoming message, that has been set up so the incoming message has the priority, the dispatch priority set into it, and we're taking that value from the message and we're sending that off to WSRR using this user property. And we're also using the name and the namespace in the top there to narrow down our search that we're doing in WSRR. So if we go on to slide 21, then this is the kind of thing you'll see defined in WSRR, where we'll have multiple services defined, and each of those has their own particular endpoint. So these are your various different dispatch services which will have their own endpoint address. In this case, we've got SOAP services, web services, and we have added a particular user-defined property called dispatch priority, and that links back to the name we set on the previous slide. And we've given it a value of same day. So this gets matched against the value that we're pointing at in the SMO, in the service message object, in the previous slide. So if that particular place in the incoming message has the value same day, then that will match up to this particular service, this particular dispatch service in WSRR. And we'd have other services, and they would also have dispatch priority user-defined properties, but their values would be something different, such as 48-hour or weekly. And in that way, we are able to choose which particular service we're going to call out to, depending on the contents of the message. So if we go on to slide 22. So after we have retrieved a particular endpoint address from WSRR, depending on the dispatch priority, we're going to call out to the using the dispatch order service invoke primitive. The particular thing we're interested here is that there's a checkbox which is by default this is checked, and that says to use the dynamic endpoint if set in the message header. So the endpoint lookup primitive, when that receives a response from WSRR with a message with a endpoint in it, then that will be set into the message as a dynamic endpoint. And so the dispatch order service will use that that dynamically chosen endpoint to call out and make the call to the chosen dispatch service. So that's the dispatch subflow. If we can go on to slide 23, please. So we've looked at the check message subflow. We've looked at the stock reservation subflow, and we've looked at the dispatch subflow. So the next one we're going to look at is the invoicing subflow. So this is using an XSL transformation primitive to convert the message as it is into another format, a more generic format to call out to a generic invoicing service. So the XSL transform converts the body of the service message object to the format that's required, and then we'll use a service invoke primitive to make the call out to this generic invoicing service. So we're going to look at a couple of the more interesting elements, things you can do with XSL transforms here. So if we can go on to slide 24, please. So the first one is that we have our message set up here, and you can see that we have in the transient context here, we've got our internal message object, our internal business object set up, called internal stock order, which is kind of where we're holding all our information as we go along the flow. And in this case, we have our list of order items, which is which, as you can see, because it's got the 1-2 star cardinality, then there's a list there, and we're going to go into each of those using the for each mapping to go to move those into the invoice item list, which is also a list in the outgoing message structure from the XSL transform. So if we can go on to slide 25, please. And so if you go into that for each element, you can see that you get to map a single instance of from one side to a single instance on the other side. So we're just concatenating the name and the item ID together to make the name in the invoice, and then we're just moving the quantity and the unit price values over in this case. So it makes it nice and simple to do quite a complicated function there, where you're going over each of your items in your message, items in a list. So if we move on to slide 26, we're going to look at something else here. In this case, we're going to use a custom XPath to join together the values from the dispatch ID value and a customer ID value to make an order ID in the invoicing for the invoicing service. So if we go on to slide 27, and you can see if you look at the properties for the custom XPath, you get a set of XSLT variables set up for you, which you can then use whatever XPath functions and structures you want to create your actual outgoing value. So in this case, we're using the XPath concat and XPath substring after functions to put together our order ID from the dispatch ID and the customer ID. And there's many other things you can do with XSL transformations. You can import and use your own custom written XSL transformations. And there's a long list of built-in XSLT functions that you can use, such as assigning values or doing normalizing or merging or appending, and various other functions. It's a really powerful tool, the XSL transformation editor. So if we can go on to slide 28, please. So the final thing I'm going to show you here is just what that general failure subflow looks like. If you've noticed, as we've been going through, we've used this in many different places. And the way we can do this is that we can set subflow terminals to the any message type type, which means they can accept any particular message, and you don't have to make a transformation to be able to send a message into the subflow. So you can reuse it in multiple times at any point in the flow, and the primitives that you use inside must also have their terminals set to any message type. And in this case, we're just doing a very simple failure handling where we're going to trace the message out, and then, and again, like we did earlier, we could perhaps have the enabled property promoted here and have that available for promotion so that you could set that in the administration console. And then we're going to just fail the flow, which will print out an exception in the logs, and it'll roll back the transaction. So, yes, it's a really useful thing to do, is using that any message type setting on your subflow to create a generalized subflow for logging or for failure management. And then if we go on to slide 29, we've just got the picture of the entire flow again, showing how it's all linked in together. And so we've gone through, we've used some promoted properties to be able to check the message details and add some missing data using a database lookup primitive in there. We've used the fan-in and fan-out primitives to make a call out to a stock reservation service once for each item in the order. We've used the endpoint lookup primitive to choose a particular service endpoint and call out to that specific dispatch service to send off the dispatch. And then we've used some XSLT magic to convert the message into a different format to call out to an invoicing service. And then we're returning an order acknowledgement, and we also can handle our failures and our fault conditions. So if we go on to slide 30, please. So this is a quick summary of what we've looked at. We had the ESB product recap, looking at the ESB Web3 ESB product, and then I outlined the Web3 ESB scenario, and then we went through and looked at that scenario implemented as a WebSphere ESB mediation flow, and looking at using promoted properties, enabling you to change flows in the administration console, using aggregation to call out to have a single message incoming but make multiple calls out using the fan-in and fan-out primitives. Then there was dynamic endpoints, using the endpoint lookup primitive to choose a particular endpoint from those registered in the WebSphere service registry and repository. And then there were some advanced XSLT functions to make do some clever things in converting your message. So if we can go on to slide 31, please. So there's a good list here of URLs for various different resources. They're all very useful stuff. And if we can go on to slide 32, I shall hand back to Joseph at this point.
Thank you, Andrew, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Daniel, we would like to open the lines for questions.
I have a question from Ashwara Venkatapati. Your line is open.
Hey, this is Ashwara from Verizon, and I have a couple of questions. What version of WPS this presentation is targeted?
So this presentation is targeted at version. Well, I did the work on version 7.0. I think 7.0.0.3 is the latest version that's available. But I think all of the functionality in it is available in 6.2. Oh, apart from the trace primitive, yes, you're right. The trace primitive came in version 7. But most of the functionality was available in version 6.2.
You mean 6.2.0.3?
Yes, 6.2.0.3, yeah.
Okay. So and another question. To change the promotable properties through console, when we click on the SCM modules, it takes very, very long time to load the page. And also, is there any way to import and export the promotable properties? Remember there is a business rules component in WPS where there is a feature to export and import the all the business rules. Similarly, is there any we don't have this feature, so is it going to be available in next versions or so?
So I think, if I understand your question, you're asking if you can export or if there's some other way of changing promoted properties using files and so on. There is a particular file that holds the promoted property values, although we generally recommend that you do use the administrative console to do so, to make those changes.
Well, from the console itself, is there any option to, currently there is no option, but is there any way we can get an option to export the properties defined in the test environment and import those properties in the production environment through the console itself?
I understand, yes. So at the moment, there is no way of doing that. There's the possibility of using policy, although that is... That is affecting your promoted properties on a message-by-message basis.
Mm-hmm.
There's some information around using policy in the WebSphere ESB Info Center. As for exporting your promoted properties and just having them imported elsewhere, that's not currently available. If you're interested in adding to our list of requirements, then please do raise a requirement with your rep, and we shall endeavour to help out as much as we can.
Okay, and one more question: the SSLT extensions, dynamic those kind of SSLT extension functions, are they supported for this version 6.2? At least the version 7. We tried in 6.2, but we couldn't get them working.
So I don't think they are in 6.2. In version 7, there is, in version 7.003, there is a new version of the XSLT engine, and it could well be that does support the things you're talking about, although I'm not totally sure about that. You'd have to send me an email with what you're specifically interested in there, and I'll find out for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
From Annie Zane, your line is open.
I have a question in terms of the first activity in your flow for the validation of the incoming message, right?
Yeah.
So how do you validate the message? Currently we're using data power for the validation to offload the performance, the impact on the whiskey. So is this a message validation for schema validation, or what kind of validation?
That's right. It's schema validation, yes. So it's based on how your business objects are set up. For performance reasons, you'd prefer to have that in data power as you have, because that's done in hardware as opposed to software in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was showing there is that you can have that validation switched on and then switch it off at runtime with promotion. If you're promoting the enables property, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be something you can do to make sure that your performance is fine, even though you've got that still sitting in your flow. It's not actually invoked when you've got it disabled.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you mean they set up a flag to turn on or turn off, right? Maybe you can, but in a production environment, whatever, we need the validation. But maybe... So the WSB is not a very feasible solution for this, given if you have a big industry schema.
That's true. It depends on what part of the message. Another thing that the message validator does is that you can choose the particular part of your message.
Oh, okay. So if I understand correctly, I support load on the business object on demand instead of load the entire schema?
That's right, yeah. So you can just choose a particular part of your message that you're interested in validating, and it will just do the schema validation on that particular section.
So was that done by the XCI something introduced by Seven, right?
It depends on what your business object parsing mode is. If you have it in lazy parsing mode and you have version 7.003, mm-hmm. and you also have the very latest XCI mm-hmm. iFix applied, mm-hmm. then yes, you can use the XCI lazy parsing business object system, and that will use the XCI validation engine itself. Yeah.
Okay. So one more question for the validation. So unfortunately, now we are using like 6.6.2, but in 6.2 we don't have that primitive, right?
Oh yes, sorry, that was another one that came in 7.0. Apologies, yes, apologies.
Okay, so that's right. On 7.0, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. Yeah. But the good thing, I can say that you can configure that this object loaded on demand, right? Instead of the entire business graph, right?
Yes, if you can use your business object lazy.
Lazy.
Right. Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Our next question comes from Sri Kantaduda.
Hi. I have a question around the recoverability aspect. You know, while fan out is looping through the records, right? There may be a failure can occur, and how do we recover from that situation?
Okay, so the fan out and fan in primitives have extra terminals on them for particular failure cases, such as there's a no occurrence terminal on the fan out if there isn't a particular list that you're pointing to or something. And if there is a failure within, and you depending on how you've got your flow set up, then you'd get broken out of the loop that you're essentially in there, and you would carry on from that point. I'm not sure. Does that answer your question?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how do we not issue like a duplicate calls, right? So while doing the fan out, let's say someone pull a, power was off, right? And how do, when we restart the module and when we try to process the message again, we would start from the record one itself, right?
Okay.
Basically the whole checkpoint and recoverability, how do we plug it into the solution?
You'd need to be able to check how much of your message has been processed already, and you'd want to perhaps cut down the part that has been processed, I guess. So this might be best to be taken offline. If you want to send me an email with your situation, I can understand it a bit better and hopefully provide you a better answer. Will that be, is that okay?
Sure, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And at this time, there are no further questions.
Thank you, Danielle. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.